To glow in the dark.
Glow in the dark. Glow in the dark.
This is the Science Fiction Podcast, Glow in the Dark Radio. I'm your host, your writer and reader, Mike Luoma. Our music is by Juan Carlos Guattordi. Each week on this podcast, I tell you stories. I share my science fiction with you. I'm a writer and a radio guy. So I put those together, 12 years ago now, and started reading my books, my science fiction, on a podcast. So yeah, originally September 2006, 12 years ago, I began doing this with Vatican Assassin, my first novel. Now we're into The Adventures of Alibi Jones. Alibi Jones used to work as a mediator for the Solar Alliance, Interplanetary Force, SAIF, SAFE. He negotiated deals, treaties, and alliances for the Solar Alliance with aliens and humans outside of the Solar Alliance alike. But since word leaked out that Alibi was responsible for blowing up the pleasure world of Kismet, it's a long story. In fact, that's the last book. But because of that now, Alibi can no longer work as a negotiator. So, Alibi Jones has joined the undercover forces of the Solar Alliance Interplanetary Force. He's got a new almost secret base, the Hornet's Nest, a new ship, and a new team. Alibi welcomed aboard Emily Brown and Nathan Brisby from the Solar Alliance Interplanetary Force. And Katra Fundler Grundler. It's one of those Dakur names. That's why, for short, we call him Kat. Kat of the Dakur. So Kat, Emily, and Lieutenant Brisby are now part of the team. And they're on their first assignment. Actually, Brisby went back to get their next assignment. So it's Kat, Emily, and Alibi trying to establish their cover as free traders on the fringe of the Solar Alliance. They're delivering illegal seafood to a small-time crime boss on the planet Argentium. So that's what's happening. They just dropped off their cargo at Tony Yang's, at the crime boss's, and they were about to drive out of the gate of his place and declare mission accomplished when one of Yang's guards shouted at them to stop with a, "Hold it right there!" And that's where we pick things up. We'll do that in a minute or two in Chapter 9 of Alibi Jones and the Hornet's Nest, coming up on Glow in the Dark Radio. First, a little bit of news. I am counting down to episode 500 and celebrating the 12th year, as I was saying, of Glow in the Dark Radio. That's happening this month, the 12th year. And I've also been working on a Patreon page. I'm not going to charge for the podcast. I'm not going to start charging for the podcast. But if you do like it, that means now you'll be able to support it. And there will be perks. I'll give you access to the whole Glow in the Dark Radio archive, audio archive, for example. Because you can't get that otherwise. I've got it all set up. I need to launch it now. So that's the next step. If you're on Patreon, please let me know, and let me know how you've done with it. Plus, I want to support my friends while they support me, hopefully. I mean, that's the idea, I think. So, like I said, I've been setting things up for a while, and now it's time to pull the trigger soon, but I just want to see how it works. See if it works for people. Okay, that's all for news. I've got Chapter 9 of Alibi Jones and the Hornet's Nest on the way next on Glow in the Dark Radio.
Hey guys, I'm Ray Belli, the host of Words for Granted, a brand new podcast that looks at how words change over time. Have you ever wondered where words come from or why they mean what they mean? Yeah? Well, me too. In fact, I think about these things all the time, and that's why I've created Words for Granted. It's kind of like an ongoing greatest hits compilation of the most fascinating word evolutions in the English language. Did you know that villain once meant farm worker, or that bead once meant prayer? The bottom line is, if you're a word nerd, let's be friends. You can find out more about the show at wordsforgranted.com and follow Words for Granted on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. I hope you tune in to the next show.
now here's Chapter 9 of Alibi Jones and the Hornet's Nest on Glow in the Dark Radio.
The security guards squinted at them, then turned back toward the gate, where another transport was coming in the wrong way, through the exit gate, escorted by more security guards. The transport was a luxury car. Alibi and Emily's transport would have been in the way. Alibi wondered, was Yang coming through? He stared at the car's windows as it passed next to their transport, trying to see in. There were three people riding in the back. The two on each side were security guards. Where Alibi thought he might see Yang riding in the middle, he instead saw a familiar face. The cognitive dissonance created a momentary disconnect. A second or two, and the car had passed before Alibi could react.
"Okay, move!" the security guard on the right shouted at them. "You got a problem?" the other one asked as he stared at Alibi.
"No siree," Alibi said. Emily took that as her cue and glided the transport forward and on out of the exit gate.
"You shouldn't have stared at that car like that," Emily said as they glided on down the boulevard, away from the manor.
"I know," Alibi said. "Couldn't help it."
"Oh? The passenger in that car?"
"I don't think he was there willingly," Alibi said. "That was an old family friend, a scientist with the project, Dr. Krishnavurti. I've worked with him a lot. Friends call him Krish."
"Not a chance Krish is there willingly," Alibi told Emily and Kat when they were back on the bridge of the cruiser.
"All I can figure is Yang had him grabbed, kidnapped."
"Why would he do that?" Emily asked.
"Krish is the universe's only real expert on the Devrisium," Alibi explained. "If you were a Frontier boss who wanted to know how to work his new Devrisium gizmo, you might kidnap Krish." Alibi broke out the rest of the mission package and called up a floating 3D display of a building between them on the bridge.
"Here's a layout of Yang's manor complex, best we can tell, based on reconnaissance and construction plans," Alibi said.
"Now let's see if we detected that power source."
He synced his wand to the display and began relaying to the cruiser's systems the scans from the manor he'd gleaned on their delivery trip. Alibi called up his new data, set the wand to overlay it onto the blueprints, and a bright blue-white dot appeared in a room on the third floor below the ground. He pointed. "There it is. So what's your plan? We head back to the manor, walk in and get it? Oh, and grab your friend on the way out," Emily said.
"Something like that," Alibi said. "Better hope Yang likes our lobster, so we get invited back to pick up cargo."
The cruiser's comm alert beeped. Someone was paging the ship. "Lieutenant Brisby."
"Hello, Captain Jones," Brisby said as Alibi answered.
"I'm not really a captain, Brisby," Alibi said. "Just call me Alibi, like I've told you, okay?"
"Okay, Alibi," Brisby said. "But you are my captain."
"Right," Alibi said. "Sure.
So where are you?"
"Outside," Brisby said.
"Standing outside the cruiser, right here on Argentium. Can I come in?"
Alibi let Brisby on board the cruiser. They briefed him on the situation so far, finishing with the kidnapping of Krish and the location scan of the power source.
"Actually," Brisby said, "I'm back here now because of Dr. Krishnavurti. The power source is one thing, but kidnapping a valued scientist from the project is quite another. I'm afraid Mr. Yang will soon have more than covert ops to worry about from the Solar Alliance."
"Meaning?" Alibi asked.
"They're about to send in safe shock troops. Plus, part of the 7th Dreadnought group will be here soon to blockade the system," Brisby said. "But we're still supposed to try to get our hands on the power source before they get here. They're giving us a window of time to grab it and get out before they come in after Dr. Krishnavurti."
"How long?" Alibi asked.
"How wide open is that window?"
"We have until tomorrow morning."
"Tomorrow morning?" Alibi said, echoing Brisby.
Brisby nodded and gestured at the 3D display.
"Looks like you're almost there," he said.
"Hardly," Alibi said.
"We've been there twice now, and we're still no closer to it. And now they know what we look like. Unless we get invited back to pick up some cargo for Yang, I don't see how we get back in there."
"Not all of us have been there twice," Kat said.
He nodded at Brisby.
"What?"
Brisby bristled as the others all looked his way.
Brisby, how would you like to visit Yang's place? Alibi asked.
Haggis? What the hell is Haggis? Brisby asked.
We're hoping Yang won't know either, Alibi said. And with his appetites, we're hoping he'll want to find out. Brisby, have you ever heard a Scottish accent?
Fine, fine, Brisby said. But if you want me to pretend to sell it, you probably should tell me what the hell it is, right?
What, an accent?
It's kind of a meat thing, Emily said.
Scottish accent would help, Alibi said. They'd needed a novel reason for Kat to contact Varagard to set up a new meeting with Yang. As Emily pointed out, they couldn't just call Yang's and ask about cargo, or they'd get shot down immediately for being too enthused, too suspicious. Alibi decided they should tell Varagard that Brisby was a trader in rare delicacies who had looked them up here on planet and hoped for an introduction to Yang. Varagard remained reluctant, so Kat turned the comm over to Alibi. When put on the spot during the conversation to provide more specifics as to what Brisby traded, Alibi pulled Haggis seemingly out of thin air. He couldn't even remember where he'd heard of it before. Haggis worked. Varagard was curious. He thought Yang would be interested. Varagard would get back to them. Alibi then sent Brisby to the med station with an emergency blanket and instructions. They were still awaiting Varagar's response when Brisby came back from the med station, blanket in hand.
Were you able to do it? Alibi asked. Brisby produced a small folded plaid blanket that had been cut down to about a foot and a half long. He shook it out, still folded over, about a foot across on top, wider on bottom, and stitched together as an expanding tube.
The medical station was able to stitch the sides together, with a few mods, Brisby said. Still don't know why we need an emergency blanket this small.
Oh, that's not an emergency blanket, Brisby, Alibi said. I hate to break it to you, but that's your kilt.
My what? Brisby asked.
Time for a crash course in Scottish cuisine and customs, Alibi said. He and Brisby went through the available data they had on Scots and Haggis. They listened to recordings of Scottish speakers. Brisby grew frustrated with the amount of info Alibi was throwing at him.
I can't understand them, Brisby said. How am I supposed to talk like them?
Just try again, Brisby, Alibi said. Need you to be our ticket back into the place. He tried. Alibi winced. Okay, he said to Brisby. Take a break. Get that kilt on, huh? After changing, the kilted Brisby was ready to meet with Mr. Yang. His accent, however, was not.
Ach, laddie, Brisby attempted.
Alibi winced again. The kilt will have to sell it, Alibi said, stepping back to look at Brisby in costume, the top of a jumpsuit cut in half at the waist, tucked into their ersatz emergency blanket kilt. Brisby threw a coat over his shoulders. Alibi looked back from Brisby to his viewscreen lit up with the image of the classic Scotsman on it. Brisby looked nothing like him.
Okay, maybe a slight resemblance.
Hopefully Yang doesn't know what a Scot should look like either, Emily said, walking onto the bridge and spying the costumed Brisby.
Thanks for the vote of confidence, Brisby said.
Kat walked over next to Alibi to look at the viewscreen. He looked back over at Brisby.
You look just like him, Kat said. To me.
The differences are subtle, Alibi said, stepping in to defuse the conversation. Have you heard back? Has Yang gotten back through Varagar?
Not yet, Kat said.
Alibi called up a picture of a cooked haggis platter on his viewscreen.
I still can't believe people eat that, Brisby said.
He looked a little green.
It's disgusting.
You're going to have to cut that out, you know, Emily teased him. You're not selling your product very well. Says here it is savory, Alibi said.
Nutty. Meaty.
From the sheep's stomach to yours, Emily said. Hey, think about it. That could be your slogan.
Ugh! Brisby grunted.
Now, 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 Brisby, Alibi said. Come on. Why is your haggis so rare out here? Brisby looked pale, and then a little more green. He swallowed a couple of times.
It's the, Brisby said.
He gulped a little air.
It's the sheep heart and lungs. You can't export anything with real sheep heart and lungs off of Earth. It's illegal. So most haggis out here isn't authentic. It's not real haggis.
Ours is made in Scotland, on Earth, with real sheep lung and heart. He paused to swallow hard. And, through certain grey market channels, finds its way out to the depot fringe. And it could find its way to you, Mr. Yang, if you are interested.
That's pretty good, Alibi said, unconvinced. Once more, and try sounding like you're not going to vomit on me as you do it this time.
Brisby tried selling his haggis to Alibi again. He was touting his real sheep's lungs and hearts when the comm alarm interrupted. Cat took the call.
Varagar, Cat said, informing them after he'd finished. He said Mr. Yang is intrigued. He would like to hear more about your haggis. We are to meet Varagar back inside the embassy.
Excellent, Alibi said. Brisby gulped.
I told Varagar that Emily was Brisby's business manager as well as ours,
Cat said.
He had assumed she was. It did not seem prudent to disabuse him of that idea.
I'm getting all kinds of work these days, Emily said. She smirked. Think you can do this, Brisby? Alibi asked.
Brisby swallowed. He straightened out his ersatz shirt and kilt, and took a deep breath.
He exhaled.
I can do this, he said, finally.
Alibi led Brisby, Emily, and Cat back out of the ship and into the embassy's main hall to meet Varagar.
A new arrival?
Varagar asked, as he sized up Brisby in his kilt. He's an independent trader who sometimes travels with us and rents cargo space in our hold, Alibi said. He just caught up with us. We thought Mr. Yang would be interested in Mr. Brisby's family business.
Some sort of human delicacy, I'm told, Varagar said.
Brisby nodded. Varagar waited for more.
Oh, yes, Brisby said after Alibi gave him a look.
Well then, Varagar said, you and your business manager come with me.
Wait a sec, Alibi said. I need to go too.
Why?
Varagar asked.
Because, Alibi said, struggling, I help him with stuff.
Mr. Yang has seen you already, Alibi Jones,
Varagar said.
He does not like extra hangers-on. Without a readily apparent reason for you to be there, I cannot have you join our party.
Alibi was about to argue further when a look from Emily and his own inner voice dissuaded him. You and Emily do us proud, Mr. Brisby, Alibi said. See if Mr. Yang wants your haggis. We can bring in both lobster and your gut sausage next time.
Feel free to wait for us in the commercial lounge, Alibi Jones, Varagar said.
He indicated a brightly lit side room off the main hall. Alibi and Cat wandered over to the lounge as the others headed out, off up the hill to the manor.
I have some matters to attend to with the embassy staff, Cat said,
stopping before they reached the lounge.
I shall return in about an hour.
Sure, Cat, Alibi said. Cat left. Unsure of what to do while he waited, Alibi found himself walking into the lounge, alone. He took a seat at the bar and glanced around the room. Alibi smiled as he noticed the woman he'd seen at Yang's speaking with her two Dakur associates across the room. She saw him looking her way and excused herself from them to walk over.
Well, look who it is, the quiet staring guy, Laurel Eden said.
I was only quiet because that woman told me to shut up, Alibi said. Didn't want to jeopardize my deal any further, you know. A man who knows when to shut up. How refreshing, she said, and rare.
She grinned and extended her hand.
Laurel Eden. Alibi Jones, he said, standing to shake her hand.
I know, she said. Your name and fame precede you. You're already famous out here on the fringe.
Great, he said, his tone heavy with sarcasm.
People are taking the measure of you right now, Alibi Jones, she said, seeing what you're made of, what you're about.
Rich, disgraced kid wasting our time? Or a functioning part of our crazy economy?
What do you think? He asked.
She started laughing. At him, not with. Way too early to tell, kid, she said, still laughing after.
I am impressed you finagled an audience with Sir Eats-a-Lot so soon.
Found my way into some cool food, his thing, Alibi said.
So I heard. And now your friends are haggling over haggis? You heard that already? He asked, surprised. Small world, the Sargentium Four, she said. She looked around the bar, then lowered her voice. You're new, so you don't know yet. But you probably shouldn't be talking to Yang without having cleared it with Gentry first, as a new guy. Gentry? Alibi asked. Billy Gentry, she said. I've heard of him, Alibi said. He's pretty big out here, right? Biggest on the fringe, Laurel said. Extremely well-connected. So, what, you check in with him on stuff because he's so big? Alibi said, playing dumb. I'm supposed to make sure I'm not stepping on his toes? She laughed again. Alibi liked watching her laugh, even if she was laughing at him. Oh, you delightfully naive boy, she said. She leaned into him, shoulder to shoulder, and tousled his hair. While she was close, she whispered, He is the boss. Godfather. Be careful. Before Alibi could respond, she planted a fierce kiss on his cheek. She pushed off him to pull away. She turned and walked back towards her table. Alibi watched her, enjoying her sway. Hey, thanks, Alibi called. She looked back and waved a little wave, her long hair cascading around her as she turned away.
You are staring at that woman, a deep purring voice said.
Alibi snapped out of his reverie. The Darkur on the other side of the bar was talking to him. The bartender was about 4'8", with a thick gray to silver pelt.
Humans do not usually do anything for too long a time, but you were looking at her for quite a while, the Darkur said.
What? I was not, Alibi protested.
There is something almost Darkur-like about her, that one, the bartender said. It makes her a rather intriguing human.
You know her? Alibi asked.
Of course, the bartender said.
He didn't volunteer anything else, but looked at Alibi. I know her name's Laurel Eden, Alibi said.
Yes, it is, the bartender replied,
then again grew silent. And? Alibi tried.
And, the bartender echoed Alibi, you are new here. I do not yet know how well you tip.
The Darkur hissed a series of quick hisses, his equivalent of laughter. Alibi smiled a quick grin. Okay then, let's see, he said. I'll have a tea and settle my tab, please. Alibi keyed in a generous tip as he settled the bill. The bartender looked at the total. He seemed to grin, but it wasn't easy to tell with the Darkur.
Thank you, Alibi Jones, the bartender said. I have heard of you, you know. But I did not know it was you for sure until I rang up your tab.
Thank you, Alibi said. Will you tell me more about Laurel Eden?
She is a friend of the Darkur, the bartender said. Laurel Eden has served on Darkur crews in the past. She's a noted business manager and negotiator. She now flies her own ship with an all-Darkur crew. Her current crew all served alongside her in the past with the Darkur fleet. Most left their current jobs to work with her now.
Loyal to her, huh? Alibi said. He smiled. He must have tipped well.
Yes, the bartender agreed. She is a charismatic leader, I am told. And, as I said, very like we Darkur in her attitudes and outlook.
Interesting.
Because you have been a good customer, I should warn you, the Darkur said. The most unfortunate thing about Laurel Eden is that she has become increasingly involved with Mr. Yang. Many speak with concern over how much she is tied into his operations.
Good to know, Alibi said. I'm just beginning to figure out how things work out here myself.
So I see, and hear, the bartender said.
He turned and walked off, leaving Alibi a little stunned. Huh. Alibi made a decision.
Speaking of Mr. Yang, while Brisby and Emily pay their visit and distract him, think I'm going to try to pay him one of my own. See how that goes. Can't wait for Yang to call us and invite us back, I'm afraid. No time. At least my wand has a few features that should help me get through some of the security up there.
Alibi walked out of the lounge and back through the main hall of the embassy. he made his way back out the front gate and onto the main boulevard leading up to the manor. At night, the silver and purple schema didn't glare quite as brightly as in day. The street lighting scene tinted a shade of light blue to bring out some of the colors in the stone and the chrome trim of the boulevard, making them glow a little in the night. Alibi walked up the hill.
Need to check the wand and see if...
Before he could pull out his wand, it went off. He pulled it out of his pocket to take the call.
Alibi? A whispery voice asked.
Yes?
Oh, thank heavens, Alibi. It's Krish, the voice said. I saw you here on Argentium today. I need your help.
That was Chapter 9 of Alibi Jones and the Hornet's Nest on Glow in the Dark Radio.
It's Krish! I need your help!
Yeah. Seems the small-timer Tony Yang is trying to go big using his stolen tech. But to use it, he needed to steal a scientist, too. So, yeah, evidently, Yang has kidnapped Krish. And Alibi's mission has just changed, so find out what Alibi Jones is going to do about Krish's kidnapping on our next episode of Glow in the Dark Radio. In the news, Patreon. If you're on it, let me know. Let me know how it goes, how it's been, what works, what doesn't. I need to figure this thing out. I'm ready to go. It's just like I gotta figure out how to launch, you know? Don't want to be in that failure to launch category. That's really it for news, and that's not even really news. That's like news I'm gonna have news, I suppose. There you go. Our music is by Juan Carlos Quatordio. And I'm your host, your writer and reader, Mike Luoma. Thank you again for listening to Glow in the Dark Radio.